make yourself another cup of tea or get another beer.
Yeah, well, I've been following a TV show recently, and I'm just having a fest, as you do when you discover that there's a whole series that you haven't seen. Is a show called Eureka, which describes the what happened to the Manhattan Project scientists, and they gathered more and more and became a village, and they, you know, they create all the black ops things. And it's basically the story of how this, the breakaway civilization started to happen. Except they don't mention the Nazis. Nobody ever mentions the Nazis. Anyway, so it's in these little snippets, these little TV shows, supposedly comedy. Sometimes they're cartoons, but they're putting out the true information about really what's going on, really how these things have come about.
In the manner of the old court jester.
Exactly.
He was the only one who could tell the king anything true because it was guised as a joke.
That's right. If it made people laugh, you could get away with anything. You could, you know, you make a funny little song that tells about how the queen's a murderous pedophile and everything's fine.
Right.
So, sorry. Oh.
We'll be as naughty as you like. I'm not squeamish about such things.
I was just looking at the chat room. There are a few women in here who say, my tongue would be too numb for me to be able to talk to him. He sounds so sexy.
Oh, bless them.
Bless them. We have some voice fans here, yeah, in the show. That's great. They love us. So, getting focused on the direction that everything seems to be going. We seem to be heading towards a kind of financial collapse, and then they're going to come along and hang up their bitcoins and say, "Oh, look, we've got our bitcoin," and these are official because they're JP Morgan. Don't worry about these other amateurs. And of course, their algorithm is not public domain. You can't examine the actual algorithm, and you won't be able to see whether they're able to do black screening on it, i.e., you know, just create money out of nothing, because bitcoins are actually made from something. They represent a certain amount of CPU time or something like that that somebody's actually put some effort into.
Sure.
And
it's a work unit.
Yes.
Think of it as a work unit, even though a human being may not be doing the actual work. Something is,
Something is, yeah. So I've been working with alternative currencies for the last 15, 20 years called LETS. We have a very strong community up here in the north of Scotland. We've traded, we're coming up to the 2 million LET mark in 15 years. And that's between a small community of like 300 to 400 people. I'm able to buy my wood supply for my wood stove to keep me warm over the winter, all in local currency, or in a mixture of local currency and pounds. So we've worked this thing. We've actually made a system that can work and can sustain itself. And it works best in economic difficulty times. Have you ever come across that personally?
Well, not that exactly, but there are rumors and have been for the last 2 or 3 years that the United States might actually break into several different states. California may break into as many as 6 states because people would rather do a production whether it's agricultural or mechanical, a production-based economy rather than this fiat currency-based economy.
Debt-based, yeah.
This is going to be... These are really exciting times. I suspect there'll be some wonderful change, but I also believe there will be a good bit of pain to go along with it because, you know, things just don't change. How many stories have you read? Well, the king was despondent. His various wars and a few gambling debts had depleted his treasury, and he was looking for some new ideas. And so the kings of today, which are the 85 individuals, families, and corporations which control 90% of the world's wealth, well, their treasuries are becoming depleted because of their various wars and so forth. One of the best movies, I think, that exemplifies this is the last Sherlock Holmes picture, The Game of Shadows. And Moriarty wants to control the bullets and the bandages. And that's how they're keeping the world running now. Absent any conflict, I believe that our economic system would stabilize for us, but the profit levels of those in control would plummet. And they're not going to have that because they are ruthless. They never learned, and if they did, then they totally embrace the evil side. The root of all evil is the love of money. Not money. Money is just the lubricant. It's the love of money which transforms itself into avarice, which is, you know, as you know, the willingness to mess somebody over really badly in order to accumulate more. I mean, greed is just a willingness to accumulate things, the desire to. But avarice, that's a problem.
I was thinking about this the other day, because that phrase, you know, the love of money, came to me the other night. I thought, it's almost more like, not necessarily the love, it's the lust after money has a more of the emotional tinge of it.
I'll say that is better.
It's like, you know, the way a dog on heat goes for it, you know. The beyond all social, you know, sensibilities and everything like that, that it's it is more the lust angle of love than the you know, the kind family caring of love.
Don't you find that language limits our thoughts? You may have a feeling you can't describe in words. That's because it's a feeling. But thoughts are described in words, and that's what I love so much about your part of the world, because the American culture, frankly, I despair of the American culture. I really do. And it's not because I don't like fun and don't like being a naughty, randy devil every once in a while. I don't mind being naughty. I don't like to be nasty, but naughty is good, I think, in small doses. But our culture has changed so radically over just the last few very quickly passing decades that I would suspect the word count of the average person is probably well under 2,000. And I think if your vocabulary is limited, just like the lust after money, rather than the love of money, the lust after. Now, that's putting a nice fine point on it, and it's very descriptive and quite a bit more accurate. And we need to go that way. We're over here, the old John Lennon song about being, keep you doped with religion and sex and TV. It's like, oh yes, that and more. Let's not forget sports and the deplorable exhibition of those people on the Grammy Awards. I don't understand why anyone thinks that that's all right. If you're an adult and we all reach a point in our lives when we've seen a pair of whatever we may be talking about. But what about children? What about the impressionable ones who don't understand the gravity of what they're viewing? You know, if you view enough images on a television and see enough stories, don't you think maybe some people would actually take from this program, take from that program, copy or emulate this behavior to build their own character and come up with their own code for living based on what they observe in others? And if you continuously feed them garbage, then you'll have a garbage-based society. The first thing you have to do before you can get anyone to take drugs is you have to get them to take some. And the first thing you have to do before you can hook anyone on porn is you have to show them some. So what are they showing? The people, repeatedly, day after day, all day, every day, in all these images, is countless stimuli, variations of stimuli, signs, posters, billboards, adverts, all of this stuff. What does that actually do to the human being? Well, in the United States, who seems to have been at the forefront of media for so many years, you're seeing the effect. but people are turning away from that. And as Dr. Richard Allen Miller, who was on Coast to Coast with me just a few weeks ago, he said it only takes 5% of the population, only 5%, to change it all. And so maybe our 5% is rising.
They used to call them the early takers, isn't it? Like the guys who first bought the iPads or first bought the iPods before anybody else did, just the geeks. And there's a point when it goes over the edge, over the tipping point, and then it becomes mainstream. But there's all these early takers. And there does seem to be a consciousness version of that. A lot of people that were doing that were kind of, you would call them hanging out with the truth movement or the New Age movement, and a lot of people are kind of moving away from. There is no name for this. I really don't think there should be, because it's, they will always try to find a name, and they'll find a leader, and then focus it and destroy it. So it has no name. It's very much concerned with the idea of what is a name, about the whole. Legal entity, the straw man kind of fraud thing. There's a lot of people waking up from all of that, you know, the difference between lawful and legal, and that level of consciousness. People are definitely starting to bite the hand that seems to be not really feeding them nice stuff anyway. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was a rather vague point there. So I'll see if I can focus that. I do have a tendency to sort of.
No, point taken. Point taken. It was a good one. Mm. Now, what's going on your side of the ocean? It's not being poisoned yet, as the Pacific Ocean is being poisoned continuously from this disaster in Fukushima, and of course our mainstream media is totally silent about it. What do you find going on over there?
Poison? We're being poisoned from within by the pedophilia that has been rampant through our elites and our government, that has now, and our entertainment industry, really, and it's all coming out. Even all the while, people are stuffing reality TV shows into their heads for some bizarre reason. I don't really get that. The weather, we've had chemtrails. We have chemtrails in Britain. We have had the weirdest, worst weather in, you know, forever, since they ever thought about recording the weather. And it all happens all at the same time. Everything's happening at the same time. We're getting storms. People are getting sick. I don't see as many reports of people getting as sick from the chemtrails as they have in the States. Although I'm sure that there are in the more densely populated. I live in a very, sparse area, rural kind of situation. I see a plane fly over, leaving a big, thick, wide chemtrail, but it's just like one, and it drifts away. Yeah, it's drifting away from me towards the city. So I'm kind of blessed with a lot of things about having clean air and clean water. Yeah, but I don't think the rest of the country is like that. And when I do, I don't like going out anywhere, really. I don't like going back to London. Going into Inverness is bad enough. So it's very much the cities are toxic here. Probably not as toxic as, say, L.A. in the summer or something like that, or New York or something like that. But we're getting that way. We're getting more towards that kind of stuffed up, blocked up, kind of jammed up kind of energy.
Well, you know, I actually got a... I'm trying to get a post on the site if it's not there already. A fellow sent a picture to me from Mexico, where the aircraft had actually drawn a pentagram in the sky with chemtrail.
Holy Lord.
Now, seriously. And yet, I was speaking with a very bright guy. I've known him for years, George. And every time I do a gig for him, I take him to lunch, and he brings a check. And it's just, you know, just these little gigs for usually real estate companies or something. He's just a freelance producer. And this guy is one of the brightest people that you'd ever want to talk to. Just a vast and varied knowledge of all sorts of things. But he is in complete denial where chemtrails are concerned. He just says, I'm not buying it. I'm like, George, don't you understand? A contrail is formed by ice crystals, which form after superheated air coming through a jet engine, through the exhaust system, creates these things, and they disappear at the tail of the contrail. It tries to, it's not catching it, but it's trying to catch up to the aircraft, and it vanishes after a few seconds. Chemtrails stay up there all day until one day I went out on my motorcycle with a camera at 9 o'clock in the morning, came back at 6 in the evening. I just spent the whole day photographing various chemtrail art. And by the end of the day, the entire sky was completely overcast, and it had all been put there by aircraft. And yet, people just don't look up, and when they do, they don't call the news media. They don't say, "Well, what's going on?" Nobody does anything. The closest anybody came to that was a little old lady, looked to be about 90 years old. I was leaving a post office. I said, "Ma'am, excuse me, if you don't mind a question from a complete stranger, but what do you make of those?" She looked up and she gave me this wan little smile. She, like I say, she was easily 90 years old. She said, "Well, I know that it's not normal, but for someone of my age, it doesn't do my health any good to even think about such things. But no, it's not normal." And that's all she said. So maybe people's, what would be apparent denial, it's just that. It just doesn't do their mental health any good to even ponder such things. Perhaps they feel like they will have no effect no matter how they complain, how stridently they complain. Perhaps they just don't know how to complain or to whom. But they're staying on the sidelines, and that's dangerous. We don't need anyone on the sidelines. We need everyone engaged. Or our governments will simply run away with us, as we know they have over the centuries, and will continue to, if we don't rise up. The only time they ever stop is when we do rise up. So what are we waiting for exactly? The bugle? Okay. Well, somebody get one and blow it, please.
So we're at the place where it's all about to happen. You've been speaking to the people. Do you think there's going to be any surprises for the people who are watching this thing? Because, you know, every time they have to, I mean, we're now used to, oh, look, there's another shooting. Oh, look, they're all actors. Oh, look, it was a drill. Oh, look, you know, there's an insurance policy. Oh, look, you know, we're starting to see the MO very, very clearly. And people are calling it, you know, as soon as it happens, the people are starting to pull the bad stagecraft apart. Do you think they have any more surprises for us, or do you think we've seen through their MO now?
Well, I don't think we've seen completely through it. I think that I've said this before, so if anyone's heard me say this, forgive the rerun. But I believe that it seemed as though globally people were really ready for 2012. You know, 12/21/2012, December 21, 2012, the Mayan calendar is coming to an end. It must signify something important. It must. They wanted it. They wanted change. Even if they don't know what specifically they wanted changed, they felt as though maybe the whole thing needs to change. Some people were even willing to endure the end of the world in order to have this change occur. But I think 2012 and the end of the Mayan calendar, if it signified anything, was that the awakening began at the end of 2012. Because all through 2013, all of these screens have been dropped and all these veils have been dropped. And there was an awakening, all right, and we awakened to find that we are and have been shrouded in darkness. And then people began to think, I believe that people en masse began to think, Well, all right, this shroud of darkness has been placed here deliberately, and I'm not sure I'm comfortable with this. So they began to do their research, and they began to do their investigation, and they began to be just slightly more suspicious of what they've been fed through their mainstream media outlets for all these years. And as they studied it and really listened and somehow realized that much of what they're hearing was simply auto-suggestion. Here, this helps to relieve pain. Here, this helps to stimulate your immune system. It helps to make you more comfortable, never saying that it would. And they found that many, many things that they had been told were these things intended to trigger an auto response. And now we find that trouble almost always comes, as is the old adage, from where we least expect it. Now, to me, there is no coincidence. Well, let me back up on that. Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Wars, what was it, episode 4, the first one? The first one was episode 4, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember when he said, in my experience, there's no such thing as coincidence? Well, in my experience, it is all coincidence. Coincidence. Events happening at once that together, separately they do nothing. But together, at the point of coincidence, something often dramatic happens. And that's what's happening now. Much like the single drop of water is not that big of a deal, but if you get enough of them together, you get a tsunami like the one that hit Japan. Now, where am I heading with this? The Department of Homeland Security here began buying literally billions of rounds of just pistol ammunition. Ammunition of a caliber that no military force outside their special operations units use. That would be caliber 40 Smith & Wesson, which is 10 millimeter short. No military organization in the world uses these outside of special ops. This coincided with the Fukushima disaster in March of 2011. I don't know if you can get it over there. You should be able to, but anyone with and I'm not sure it works on an Android phone either. But I do know it works on the proverbial well-distributed iPhone. And that's a little free app called Safecast, S-A-F-E-C-A-S-T. You just download it for free, and it will show you where the radiation is. Now, a few months ago, and I don't mean even six, Japan is glowing blue, the low end of the spectrum, of this intensity spectrum. Then they have a scale on the thing for you right there that you can see. And right where Fukushima is, you know, it's pink and red and yellow where it's really hot. Well, there was none of that sort of thing on the North American continent until the last three and a half months. And now if you go to Safecast, you will see that a wave of radioactivity is hitting the U.S. There is also, allegedly, a 100 million ton island of rubbish from the tsunami that destroyed the Fukushima Daiichi plants headed for the west coast of the United States. But no one says anything about it on any of the mainstream media outlets. Nothing. The sea stars are melting. This may be a bit strong for some, but their innards pop out. You can see their guts and everything, and then they melt. They just melt. And in a subsequent report, subsequent to the original one that I read about this, about 4 months ago, I suppose, and then another one came along about a month and a half later, it said that it was also occurring off the coast of Maine, which is in the northeastern United States, as well as one of the Carolinas, either north or south. And sure enough, you look on Safecast, and you can see that while you don't have distinctive blue splotches in the mainland interior, it's all over the West Coast. Canada has this strange cloud over it, and there are some dark blue splotches right along Maine's coast and the coast of the Carolinas as well, where they said these sea stars were melting there as well. So I theorized, what would the government officials envisage the population's response to be if this population suddenly got the idea that they were, well, on a very short timeline as far as being alive was concerned? Would it just be wild in the streets? Would they just decide, well, we're all gone anyway, we might as well just do as we wish? I think somebody has thought of it, and I think that's one of the reasons that they're arming up the way that they are. The police departments are all being militarized as we pull our legitimate armed forces out of the Middle East. Now, instead of leaving that stuff there, they're selling it to various police departments. You can buy one of those giant mine-resistant, they call it an MRAP, mine-resistant armored personnel, I guess it is, for like $2,000. This is a $150,000 vehicle to buy, and they'll sell it to a police department for $2,000. So what does this tell us? It tells us that for whatever reason, they're getting ready for something enormous. It could be Fukushima. It could be a financial collapse where the ATMs don't work and nothing. Your car doesn't work at the gas station, at the supermarket, can't get anything out of your bank. They're closed. You got bank holidays and all this. That's what I mean about the single drop of water versus the tsunami. We have so many little drops out there that we may be looking at a tsunami. And if people seek some sort of, what should we do? I can only go back to, I believe it was in Proverbs where it was written that the prudent man, person, if you will, when he sees trouble approach, removes and hides himself. The unwise man remains and is punished. And in other translations, it's is destroyed. So, there you are. It's a grim scenario, but these grim scenarios present themselves every few years anyway. We know this. And so we're just going to have to, it's a nasty sandwich, but we're all going to have a little nibble.
You know,
and those in, yeah, anyway, I'll stop now. You go ahead, JP, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's fascinating. This is part of the change that is going through mankind. That we have to face up to the thing that we've been denying. Now, in the esoteric world, they call that the dweller on the threshold. Everything that you see, the dweller on the threshold. So,
the dweller on the threshold.
Yeah, it's like a shadowy figure at the doorway. And it's also because that's you, right? It's the shadowy figure is all of yourself that you haven't allowed into that you've split off from yourself, basically. And that is everything other. And so it becomes all of the evil in the world. Because, you know, it's the evil within ourselves. Like you say, you know, we've all got a bit of that sandwich. It's what we do with that sandwich and how thinly we spread it. Yeah. And how we can process it into something that is useful. You know, we have to become composters. We have to be able to heat it up and turn it back into its carbon and nitrogen and useful stuff. Do you have ideas of... 'cause my feeling, right, is that the world in general, people in general, and Americans in particular, have been traumatized and are acting out the result of a mind control trauma, a la MKUltra on a huge scale, starting in 9/11. What are your thoughts on that, John?
Well, let me ask you this. Just narrowly focus that question just a little bit, because as you spoke, I began to spin off mentally into several other directions and wandering around aimlessly in search of a response to a question that hadn't been asked yet is actually what that is, of course.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, you're getting the ballpark of where I'm going.
Well, I'm going to ask you to restate your question.
Okay, so we've seen the effect of MKUltra on individual people.
Oh, yes.
We've seen, we know they can create the Manchurian candidate. We know they can create an assassin that doesn't even know that they're an assassin. Could be anybody.
Yes.
They can activate people with a telephone call, a snap of the fingers, a bang of the rod, whatever. But I believe that the entire country of America has been mind controlled in a similar way. starting at 9/11. It was, and I believe even that Britain has been it's been happening to Britain since Princess Diana. That was our 9/11. It happened in 97, yes. 4 years before. But I believe that, you know, we've been traumatized and cattle prodded ever since. And this is a lot of the reason why people aren't, you know, out in the streets and revolting so much, because they've been, you know, watching TV and being traumatized by this thing.
I get you. Well, yes, television, in fact, the first show, it's liable to be one of those wild careening takeoffs. I like smooth ones. But sometimes they're a little wild. The first takeoff on the caravantomidnight.com is tomorrow. But one of the things that I want to open the show with is the positively, horribly detrimental effect that television has had on this culture. And yes, I entirely agree. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I kind of liked George Bush at first. It was like, good, Wyatt Earp's here. He's going to take care of the bad guys. But wait a minute, as time, and not much time, began to go by, this whole thing looked worse and worse and worse. And it didn't escape my notice that the look on his face when he was reading the book to the children, he had the same look on his face when he was informed that the towers had been hit as Dwight Eisenhower had on his face when he was warning the American people that we must beware the military-industrial complex and to never allow the military and industrial complex to mingle with government. Both of them, George Bush looked like he had just gotten a really strong dose of reality as to how deep the dreck he was standing in is. And Eisenhower had a look on his face of a man who was terrified for his country, because for him to say that meant he knew it was already underway. So, yes, it's amazing to just as recently as today, I met a friend to actually get some equipment from him, and we went to a place that serves up, you know, meat and carbohydrates. That's their deal, and the waitresses are all they're deliberately and transparently frisky with the customers and so forth, and somewhat scantily clad, although none of them would be arrested if they went out on the street. But it looks like their costumes are more suitable for the pool than for, you know, really anything else. And they knew nothing of Fukushima. They knew nothing of the buildup of the DHS's magazine, if you will. They knew nothing of the militarization of the police. But they were interested. And I told them, you need to completely reject and turn away from mainstream media. You are being lied to. And I said, look at me. Just look at me. If I look crazy to you, well, then just ignore what I'm saying to you and go on about your day. They're like, you don't look crazy. I said, well, you need to do some investigation. You can start at these websites here, and I gave them several. And you need to talk to your friends about this, because you are going to be the victims. And you'll be the most likely victims, because you are the least informed. But you are being played. My generation, I'm a baby boomer, late baby boomer, but still, my dad was a World War II guy, and my mother helped build aircraft to go into battle. And my son told me, you know, Dad, I think your generation got set up big time. And he amplified this. And by the time his speeches had concluded, I was in complete agreement with him that we were sold all of that patriotism and love of country and defend mom and the girl next door and our right to eat apple pie and capitalism and all of that. This is just a mantra that has been repeated over and over again, to the point that no matter what happened, we still believed we were those people. And now we're waking up to the fact that we are becoming one of the most hated, if not the most hated nation on earth, that our military is being used as the muscle end of the banking cartels, and that we engage in regional conflicts and limited small-scale wars for profit. Has nothing to do with ethics, It has nothing to do with saving the people of a besieged land. It's all about the Benjamins. And so, yeah, I'm in complete agreement with your suggestion. You know, we have been put into a trance here, and I just hope that we can continue to wake up. I believe that 90% of the people in our government should be removed from government through the electoral process and not allowed to enter politics again on any level.
Well, I like the idea of what Iceland has done. You know, they're basically prosecuting the bankers, and they've thrown out all the government, and they've just done a lottery. It's like bingo. Yeah, you want a job in government? Here you go. You think you can do it better? There you go.
And that's the Vikings,
why not?
Again.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I live 7 miles from a place called Berghead, which is a Viking colony. In fact, my ex-wife lives there. Maybe she was a Viking. She's about 4 inches taller than me, and you know. But that there is a very strong individuality here. You know. Very clan oriented, and people's family. Oh, excuse the kettle sort of boiling on the stove there in the background. We've got it's a very strong community base still here, and I think that's something that is missing in lots of parts of the world. And it's certainly something that has been created by this TV bred paranoid mindset it's like a kind of virus that has infused everybody in the States, isn't it? I think it's a combination of being shocked and overwhelmed at the same time. It's like, I remember, you know, it's, for instance, it's the way adverts are run. In Britain, it used to be, when there was a television program, that there would be a fade to black. There would be a logo, and then there would be a fade to black, and then there would be an advert, which lasted a certain period of time, and then there would be a fade to black, and then another advert. And then we would see how, in the States, you would see a quick flash, that was the show's logo, and boom, straight into an advert. And they cut faster and faster and faster, and they're the same adverts, and they're really awful. Which is, I'm sure that they're deliberately awful to be kind of mind numbing, so that your intelligence is insulted so much it kind of shrinks away and hides in some cave somewhere. I don't know what it's supposed to do, but the onslaught of this commercial advertising that almost is useless is what we call flogging a dead horse. You know, what's going on? What's going on? How do you see it? I mean, how do you experience? Do you ever watch your mainstream TV ever?
Oh, I look at it just to monitor the game a little bit. But back in the not that long ago, the advertisers used really proper English, and even though they were lying, they would say, this particular brand of cigarettes will not irritate your throat. And or a doctor would be on there saying, smoking like an idiot, just puffing away, and he said everything except, no, they're actually really good for you. Now what I see is anti-depression medicine. You can have beautiful toenails, however the disclaimer is longer than the actual meat of the commercial enticing you to avail yourself of some of this product, and it's just a litany of all these horrible things that you may experience or that may happen to your health if you take this product. And then right after that will come a law firm's commercial that if you've taken any of these, they don't say this, but FDA approved drugs, you may be and suffered injury or death. I mean, I never understood how they could make an advert saying, if you have suffered injury or death as a result of taking this medication, you may be entitled to money damages. And I could just see someone hold up their hand going, well, I experienced death. Do I get more? It's so stupid. An advert pushing a drug followed by a law firm's ad suing the drug company for anyone having taken the drug. And that's where we are now. It's all reaching end game. It's all coming to an end. It's just stupid. And people are recognizing it as such. And it's a good thing. People are getting, they're getting smarter. They're already intelligent. But Wells' definition of smart is the practical application of intelligence. And people are becoming smarter. And as I like to say, if you get tired of something and you want it to go away, stop buying it. That's all you have to do.
What a
just
lovely
quit
point.
Buying it.
What a lovely point to take a break at the top of an hour. Perfect. Perfect time. I'm going to put... Do you like the Doors?
Absolutely.
So I'm going to put on Riders on the Storm because, you know, I think there does feel like there's a dark and stormy night approaching. So let's just get into that mood, eh? Yeah. Takes a long time to build up this one. There we go.
Dark and stormy nights encourage community.
Excellent.
This is Ever Beyond with JP.
Yes, this is Ever Beyond with JP, and indeed JB this afternoon. JB Wells, indeed. The ye of the coast-to-coast AM sound. Hey, we've got some new stuff, though, haven't we, John? We've got, you know, coast-to-coast is so much last year and so much this last time. We've got some future projects, and I love the name of it. It has a great kind of mystique, a sort of Eastern promise, as it were, Caravan to Midnight. Do you want to talk about... some of that, and maybe where you're at with that?
Well, absolutely, positively. Now, what you may not know is that as of Tuesday, what would that be, the 28th? Yep. I am no longer with Coast to Coast AM. I have been relieved of command of the Saturday night flight, and the timing of this was absolutely perfect. I started to go here a little bit earlier, but we, you know, we went off on a little side trip, which was fine. But the fact is that some of these guests that I brought onto the program were just a little bit too controversial for some. One of them would be Professor Griff, one of the founding members of Public Enemy. A couple of listeners couldn't understand why would you talk to a hip hop artist when the world is falling down around our heads. The answer is, because he's written three really, really good books regarding the Illuminati and how they control the media, as we touched on the deplorable antics displayed at the Grammy Awards. So, I received a telephone call from the High Priestess there, and she gently informed me that they wanted to go a different direction on Saturday nights. And I said, okay, well, I completely understand. But, of course, there's all sorts of intrigue that goes along with it that I'll spare you and the listeners that stuff, but it's deliciously complicated.
Oh, no, we like a bit of intrigue. No. Well, no, obviously there's things that need to be carefully trodden around this kind of tender juncture. But so did you actually listen in last night? You know, did you find out what direction they are actually going in?
Yes, I listened for a few minutes and I thought, all right. So you want to take the kiddie trail? Fine. Personally, I like to go off road. I either like to do the super highway with no speed limits, or I want to take a little goat trail that only, you know, the bighorn sheep would dare to follow. But I don't like the kiddie trail. And that's just how it is. And there was another issue, too, which I wouldn't mind sharing with you, and that is, you know, the radio business spins everything. They'll tell you that they have X number of listeners when, in fact, they don't. So, and one would think that when one program on Saturday had numbers as high and many times higher than the number of listeners Monday through Friday combined, this was not helpful. And so, since it wasn't about numbers, you know, if you're playing football and you're out on the field playing it, how much time do you spend looking at the scoreboard? Answer, none. You're playing the game. And that's what I was doing. I wasn't keeping up with numbers or anything else. So it was only a couple of days ago I found out what the numbers really were. Nobody of numbers being the number of people listening. And I didn't ask. I was just waiting for the light to come on. When the light comes on, we start the program, and that's it. And I sat there for 2 years. When I found this out, then I had an aha moment. But again, the timing was perfect. I wanted to do the show not as a competitive measure against a program that I was a part of, certainly, and because it was not over the general broadcast airwaves, I felt there would be no conflict. It was simply because I could not get really any more slots on Coast to Coast with that audience that is interested in these sorts of things and these types of subjects and this range of guests. I just wanted to do more during the week. In fact, I thought, well, maybe I can bring some of these people that I find for the daytime program. Maybe I can bring them onto the bridge of the mothership on the weekends. But alas, that was not to be. And so tomorrow is the first day. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. Pardon me, 10 o'clock in the morning until 1 in the afternoon. It's 3 hours.
What time zone is that?
Well, let's see. That would be I'm at GMT minus 6 at this time of year. So
your central time, yeah?
Yeah, so 4 until 7 UK time.
All right. So that's quite an accessible time, UK time. That's quite early on in PST, though, isn't it?
Yeah, 8 until 11. They might not be in the mood.
The breakfast early in the morning for this kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, but the good thing is that... And the reason that I made it a subscription service, now, people have said, I've seen all sorts of silly things like, this guy did a shout out one time, bless his heart, he was standing there with his video camera on, he had these enormous headphones on with this microphone, he was giving a shout out, wondering if we wanted to be a corporation coast to coast, and why it wasn't offered for free, and I thought, what is he talking about? It is offered for free, you have to sit through a lot of commercials. About 23 minutes of them per hour. But what does he mean? But he must have been talking about the archives, making them free. In the case of CaravanToMidnight.com, the reason that I made it a subscription service is because we are going to bring on lots of guests who will have information that simply should not be broadcast over the public airwaves. And I'll tell you why. Back when dinosaurs roamed the earth, that decade that I miss so much, the 80s, I was the narrator, and inside each episode, the narrator and the announcer is what I'm trying to say, of a program called Guilty or Innocent, and it was hosted by a famous trial lawyer named Melvin Belli. And because I was a former rock and roll disc jockey, they thought it would be fun if they had a vignette in which the former rock and roll disc jockey could play, yes, a rock and roll disc jockey. So they said, hey, you want to do this little episode? I'm like, yeah, sure. So I did it. The vignette was about a disc jockey who had promoted a contest. And he admonished his listeners, chase down the van, track that van down, seize the valuable tickets to the Highline concert event. Well, unfortunately, someone with questionable driving skills caused a fatality. And the story was about what is the culpability and liability of the disc jockey and or the station. And this is the analogy that I apply to the situation with Caravan to Midnight. When you become a member, you become a member of a private organization. And I put this in the newsletter too. We don't want you, I don't want you, to just come and spend some money, some of your money with us, and then that's it. I want you to take this information, I want you to vet it yourself, and I want you to spread the word so that we can change the government and the societal ethics to a point that we return to doing something that's beneficial for the citizens instead of just using them, taking their money, taxing them to death, promising them everything, promising them free health care, but forgetting to tell them that it will break the system, forgetting to tell them that they lied about being able to keep their own doctor, forgetting to tell them that, well, once you reach a certain age, we'll have to determine whether keeping you alive any longer is really worth the money. Restore some ethics. And as an adjunct to this website, I intend to put onto the web a list of all people in government in our country, state by state and city by city, in the top 50 cities, and then as we are able to add 51 through 100, and put on there anything that we can that indicates whether or not they should or should not remain in office. And this will become a resource for people to use in deciding who to vote for. We must overcome and eliminate this cult of personality. Oh, yeah, he's a cool guy. He smokes cigarettes. Yeah, but unfortunately, he has a knife in his hand. It's actually concealed in his sleeve. And the moment you turn your back on him, he's going to plant it in your back. And any of that stuff, we're going to rat them out for it, as we say in the States. And so that's just how it is. I did not put up the site to enrich myself. I did it because, for the same reason that I went on Coast to Coast and took too many risks for the corporate types to endure. If this had been just a job, and I'm no good at being noble, but I'm just saying, if this had been just a job, I would have quit long ago, gone back to my studio and just done voiceovers for people. No muss, no fuss, no stress. Just make the recording, send the sound file, and we're done, rather than go out with my real name and try and carry this torch. All I can do is bring the information. I'm just a single person, but I will do my best to bring the highest quality information. If I make a mistake, I'll say so, and I'll correct it. Somebody else I bring on the program makes a mistake, I'll bring that to the viewer's attention as well. And it's live streaming a video, we hope. We've had to go to a dedicated server, this monstrous thing, because the response was just nothing that I thought could possibly happen. Thousands of people are joining Caravan to Midnight, and when I got this news, I didn't know what to say, except thank you, because it was driven by my presence on Coast to Coast AM, but now that I've been relieved of command of the Saturday Night Flight, as I say, people found value or some substance in what we were talking about on Saturday nights, and so they've joined Caravan, and I am deeply humbled, and more than anything else, I am impressed with a responsibility to not let them down. And so as long as I have my strength and my breath, that will be my focus, to bring not the whole truth, but as many little glimpses of the truth to their attention, and then let them run with it and do what they may. And by joining a private organization, I don't have lawsuits coming at me because some random person out there saw it over the general airwaves, twisted off into a direction they should not have twisted off and gone in, and then creates blowback for me that may or may not be containable. So I hope that's clear enough.
Right. Quick disclaimer there. So that's an awesome thing that you're creating. So from Mothership to Caravan.
Yes.
From very high
low
to
tech,
very
man.
Yeah, very low tech. Because that's the way it's going to go. You know, I feel it. You know, this is like, it's going to be, you know, solar flares may produce the necessity to go low tech. You know, their main, you know, all the chips in everything that you have, all your cars might be fried one day, by, you know, kind of by accident by the sun or something. We could end up, you know, just using old valve powered amplifiers being the only things that are still working.
Russians are the only ones even making any vacuum tubes.
Yeah,
to replace,
I must bone up on my RF oscillations. Anyway, so But then we go from that caravan, a really bad segue, to the boat that rocked, and the actor who played the rock DJ, and he was it's Philip Hoffman, who has just mm-hmm. been found dead, having fallen on a needle down an elevator shaft or something.
Yes, and it's stuck in his arm.
It's stuck in his arm, isn't it? It's very, very convenient for them to show them that he's some kind of he's had some sort of injection that he may have fouled up himself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't look good, does it?
You know, it's like, we see. You know, now we start. You know, instead of saying, "Well, did he commit suicide?" No, it's more like, "Okay, who's left their signature?" It's more like who. Which organization was responsible for doing this? You know, what are the little signs that they leave around to say, you know, it was one of ours and don't investigate this, as we know that they do these things. Any ideas?
Oh, yeah. Well, we know the security services have penetrated the media for some time. A young lady named Amber Lyon came on the program. This doesn't have so much to do with security services as it does with, well, the ones that control them. And she revealed that CNN had received payments to run certain stories and had received payments to not run certain stories. So I brought her on the program. She is an intrepid, true video journalist.
Awesome, awesome. She makes me cry every time she utters a syllable. She's got so much depth. I love her, yeah.
Yes, she does. And that little gal with RT, Abby Martin, fantastic. And and even Sean Stone and Tyrell Ventura, Jesse's son, and Jesse himself, they've all been on the program. They're all trying to, well, as Zabrinsky said, the Syrian action was stopped by the alternative media. This should give us all hope. But going back to the security services and CIA and so forth, infiltrating, or not necessarily infiltrating. They don't infiltrate at all. They walk right up to people and say, we'd like for you to do some things for us. And there was a small expose on this a week or so ago, which, of course, has completely dropped off the scope now, unless you, I'm sure you can find it on a search engine. But anytime you see, three Highline bankers gone in a week and an actor is gone in a week with a needle in his arm, that just doesn't seem like something. That doesn't seem the style Hoffman would have departed in, you know? And then we go back to Aaron Schwartz and two and almost three people that I had on my program. That would be Captain Philip Marshall, former United Airlines pilot, in his book, The Big Bamboozle, his observations of the 9/11 event, and also another one that's published, been published posthumously, Lakefront Airport. He and Barry Seal, security services operatives during the Iran-Contra thing. We bring down the ammo and the guns. You pay us in cocaine. And then Robert Tosh Plumlee, who was also a pilot for the security services back in the day. He's completely dropped off the scope. So Philip Marshall is dead. We're supposed to believe that he killed his 14-year-old daughter, 17-year-old son, the Shih Tzu dog, and himself. I spoke with him over telephone many times. Never picked up any suggestion that anything was wrong with him. He sounded neither despondent nor overly happy. And I feel like I can gauge those things pretty well because I do 99.9% of my business with the outside world over a telephone. And much like that guy... I can't call the actor's name. He did a show called Lie to Me, where he just studies the face and can determine motive and what they're thinking and everything else. I've been able to do that pretty well just by listening to people's voices over the telephone. It's just a narrow focus. Then Michael Hastings, another intrepid journalist, a second piece of video, he came on my program, and a few months later, he's gone too. And you can see in this one particular video, up there's the primary charge. Whoa, there goes the gas tank. Oh, wow, there's the main charge. That was a bomb. That's no car wreck. And then, I don't know if I even finished this one, but earlier about Dr. Jim Garrow and that unusual transfer of nuclear weapons from Dyess to South Carolina, he had an attempt made on him about 10 days after he was on the Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM. So they tampered with his brakes. It appears that once the car reached a certain speed, and the driver turned it, then the outboard front wheel would lock and would flip him. But this did not happen because the tampering was discovered by a mechanic, and so Garrow's going to join us on the program Monday on caravanatmidnight.com. So it's a dangerous, sticky business that we're in right now, and it's going to get more dangerous and stickier as time goes by because these people are brutal. They will not relinquish their power easily, and once they are run off, they will attempt to come back. So even when we scotch the snake and have not killed it, it will return. I borrowed that from a Scottish play.
In East London, where I grew up, in fact, it's a really weird thing. You know, Ken, the guy who introduced me to you, Ken Keeling?
Yes, yes.
All right. Bizarre thing, right? I grew up in East London in an experimental block of flats, of apartments. Two-story apartments, very interesting, and they were unique. No other examples of this architecture existed anywhere else. And the middle of this block, which hasn't been demolished, the other two were demolished, where I lived, and this other block that was the same, that were kind of, they were like a tower block lying on its side. It was like sideways long. And then in the middle was Keeling House, which was named after Ken's family, and it was the first thing he mentioned to me. And I'm like, how do you know that I grew up next to Keeling House? That is so bizarre. Anyway, so where was I going with that?
That's excellent.
Don't ever go on his program. People die from it.
Right.
I risked my life to go on this radio show. So
that's the Widowmaker. That's me.
Yeah, this is the thing. How come you're not dead?
Well, I have put an apparatus into place among. And I don't mind stating it.
Yes,
security is a thing that you have that no one knows that you have.
A dead man's handle of some kind, yes.
Something like that. And let's just put it this way. Anyone who would attempt such a stupid thing cannot possibly imagine what the consequences will be. The people who are covering me are large in number, and they do not know each other. And they have not been contacted by telephone, not by cell, not by landline, not necessarily in person by me, not through the mail, not through email, none of these methods. There are other methods. And as a matter of fact, I can recommend a book to you by a man that I want to interview that I was not allowed to interview on Coast to Coast AM because his Cuban accent is very thick. But when you see him on video, I don't really see what the problem is. I've talked to him on the phone. I don't really see what the problem is, but I could not get him on the program, and his name is Servando Gonzalez. He's a Cuban, and he wrote a book called Psychological Warfare and the New World Order. And in it, he describes how you can construct your own little intelligence cell, and it's quite effective. So I was already on that track, but taking a few hints from this one and that one, and I've never been a spook. I've never been in the military, but I have been on the periphery of these things off and on for a few decades. And so I can just say that it would be a really bad idea to try and get rid of me that way. And I keep a Geiger counter around in case they want to light me up with some polonium or something. If you need, by the way, if you need one, come to caravan2midnight.com. We sell them.
Geiger counters, awesome.
Oh yes,
I've always wanted a Geiger counter. It's been one of the things that I've been looking for. You know, it's like maybe I could build one myself. Where can I find a Geiger Müller tube in Earth? Like all that stuff. But you know, like all of my electronics projects, they would be sitting in a box for about 8 years before I finally got around to do it. I built myself a theremin once. That lay in a box for 2.5 years, and eventually built one. And you know that thing that they used in the 50s for the spooky movies. It's that spooky movie sound.
Ah, yeah,
hang on.
I
got the.
Well, you're probably a couple, maybe as much as a year and a half, 2 years off from any of this Fukushima stuff having made its way around the world to you. You've got a good bit of ocean. It'll take a long time for it to, you know, make its way all the way from Japan, following the wind currents over to your part of the world and into Western Europe. But But it's not good. And the reason I started selling Geiger counters was I went to the mad scientist laboratory and started looking for mine. It turned out to be this old thing from atomic research out of Colorado, and it's huge. And I thought I can't carry this around with me. So I sought out some smaller ones, and eventually I met Vince Mazur, who is actually in Colorado as well. And he makes an excellent instrument, and so we offer those for sale. And he's
called Mazur.
Yes, M-A-Z-U-R, Vince Mazur, MazurInstruments.com.
He sounds like a weapon.
You know, he is the coolest. He is just the coolest engineer guy ever. He's just a steady engineer guy. He doesn't want to sell anything because he refuses to promote anything that could be likened to fear-mongering. He does not use that technique. He is just a straight-up engineer. And the thing is it's true. If you go on an airplane flight, you're up at 35,000 feet, you're going to get a pretty good dose of ionizing radiation. But that does not mean that this Fukushima thing is no problem. It is a problem because of the cesium-137. Once it gets into the food chain, that's a problem. And a lot of people are selling nascent iodine. Now, let me just say this about nascent iodine. Nascent means emerging and beginning to show the possibility of usefulness or promise. So as a dietary supplement, people who take it may feel an improvement in their overall well-being because they may be iodine deficient. But as far as protecting you from the effects of cesium-137, the only thing that potassium iodide tablets protect is your thyroid gland. It will do nothing for your lungs if you inhale it. It will do nothing for your gut if you eat it. So just be aware, and before anybody pulls the trigger, as we say in Texas. Actually, I just said it. We don't say it in Texas. Look into what you're being sold, all of it. And as this conspiracy thing gets bigger and bigger and so forth, the potential for people profiteering is going to increase as well. So vet your sources, vet me, vet this one, vet that one, vet them all, and then decide what you're going to believe. And remember, at the same time, you can be shown the truth, but nobody can make you believe it. That is up to the individual, what they believe. So be careful. And here endeth that lesson.
I think selling scientific instruments on websites is a damn fine idea. I may investigate some manufacturers. Because they're not cheap. Because the Geiger Müller tube is the expensive part. All the rest is quite simple. But what kind of prices are you talking for a Geiger counter?
Let's see.
And is it a classic one that goes?
No, these are really cool. What these Mazur instruments do? There's two available. There are two available. I'm trying to use proper English here. It's not easy.
Two is available, isn't it?
Yeah, there's an 8,000 and a 9,000, and they both do the same thing, of course, just the 9,000 does more. Under 500 USD for the 8,000, and I want to say I'm not looking at the site right now, but I think it's 595, something like that, for the 9,000. But the good thing about this device is you can turn it on. It has an extremely long battery life, and you can actually download it, its recorded data onto your laptop and see when the spikes occurred, if any. And you can see the average CPM rather than just, holding this thing in your hand and you put it over, like in Mad Max, where he waves his Geiger counter around the guy's water that he's trying to sell him and starts, hissing and all of that. It's not one of those deals. You can turn the alarm off. It's a little boxy, but it's not huge, and so it's portable. You can carry it with you, but it's not something that a lady could slip into her handbag and then discreetly wave it around her vegetables.
You'd need to slap it around in a rucksack or something like that.
The best thing to do is just set it outside. Okay. You don't want to leave it in the rain, and just let it sit there for a couple of days.
Uh-huh. So it's more for the sort of the background radiation rather than as Wolf Baby is suggesting, going food shopping, purse in one hand, Geiger in the other.
Yeah, idea. radiation in food, radioactive particles in food, is very difficult to detect. And you need really expensive equipment for this, but it can be done. And let it suffice to say that if you take a Geiger counter around a fish, and the CPM indication goes up, just back away from the fish, because if you can read it with a Geiger counter holding it, just, you know, 6 or 7 inches away, that's a hot tuna, like the band.
That's one that will cook itself.
Yeah. So, but I'll tell you, many people have stopped eating seafood from the west coast of this country, and Alaskan salmon, and there were virtually no sardines in this year's harvest. None. The reports are, I was not on the boat, but the reports are that were presented to the public over outlets like Drudge and others, are that they didn't even catch one sardine. Not one.
So it's and one of these species that is like selectively dying.
Well, yeah,
because there seem to be these species that are just that lot are going, boom, you know, suddenly it's all the black crows, and suddenly it's all the little white birds with the blue flips, and, you know, it's very specific, isn't it? What do you know, have you got any ideas about why that might be going on?
I don't. I really don't. I think in the case of the seawater, I was speaking with Dr. Helen Caldicott in Australia last week, and she's a very interesting lady. I believe she's a Nobel laureate as well. And I said, well, is it your opinion that the ocean is being poisoned? And she said, I'm just slightly paraphrasing here. She said, well, I don't believe it's being poisoned. The problem is that the cesium-137 will get into the algae and into the seaweed, which the little fish eat, and then the bigger fish come along and they eat them. And then I'm thinking to myself, yes, that sounds like the ocean's being poisoned. The problem is that it's getting into the food chain and will continue to get into the food chain because, frankly, JP, there is no solution to this problem. That is a real no-kidding meltdown. It has burned through the soil. It has gone to China syndrome, which means it's contacted the groundwater, and there's no way to contain it anymore. It will be an ongoing, escalating, rolling nightmare for generations to come. It's just the way that it is. And people say, why isn't the world flocking to Japan's aid? It's because there's nothing they can do about it. Nothing. And actually, this will be interesting. You don't have to join Caravan to Midnight to be able to get the newsletter, which you'll find interesting, I think, and also to access our news links. So if you go to caravantomidnight.com, you click on news, and then click on red alerts, you'll see a letter that was posted, written by a man who likes to be called Frank. But his real name is, and I always call it wrong, his real name is Dr. Minoru Kawamoto. And he was in the Japanese Imperial Army. He's 93 years old and as sharp as a tack. And I spoke to him last week, or the same week that I called Helen Caldicott. And he's so articulate, his English is so good. He was involved and documented the many atrocities the Japanese committed against the Chinese in World War II. I don't know if he's at Nanking, but it's a distinct possibility. And there were many atrocities committed by the Japanese. We had a teacher at school. Somebody made fun of him one day about the way he spoke, and I said, come here. Do you know why Mr. Ross speaks that way? He said, no. Why? Because he's a goofball. I said, no, because the Japanese cut half of his tongue out during the Bataan Death March. Do you get it now? And he said, oh, no. And I said, oh, yes. He said, I'm so sorry. I said, don't tell me, but if he heard you, you need to say I'm sorry to him. So, Dr. Kawamoto was in charge of putting the freeway system and highway system back together in Japan. He was very successful at it. So his next task was to get their oil refineries going. And he got the first oil refinery in Japan after World War II up and running again, and also made a deal with some country. Sumatra or somebody. Somebody had some oil. I can't remember the country he did a deal with. But then they said, we want you to go to the United States. This nuclear power thing looks really good, and we want you to get with Dr. Alvin Weinberg, who was with the Oak Ridge Labs. And they became friends. And if you go to Caravan to Midnight, click on news, click on Red Alerts, you'll see Dr. Kawamoto's letter that he presented to the Japanese government in 1957, stating that under no circumstances should Japan pursue nuclear power. It will never be safe, and it has the potential to be an ongoing nightmare. And they didn't listen, and this is what you have now. So,
you know,
we were warned.
Let's just take it back about half an hour, because
okay,
because we were talking about Eisenhower,
mm.
And Eisenhower made a big kind of, basically that was his confession. His confession, public confession, I sold out and I sold you guys out, and, well, I suppose I'm sorry. But basically you were sold out because he was visited by the two races. You've heard about this meeting in Camp, oh, God, Pendleton? No. I forgot the name. Anyway, basically he had a meeting with two groups of ETs. One group said...
Oh, yes.
And what they were not, Aryans, no, Etherians. And they said, stop using nuclear power, no, stop making nuclear weapons, and stop using plastic, and we'll talk to you. And the military-industrial complex however they manipulated Eisenhower, whatever his predilections were, they managed to twist him and made him choose the Greys, and... therefore the rest of the thing, the rest of the problems. As far as I can see, that is the moment in our history that if we ever had the chance to travel back in time and persuade somebody not to make a decision, that's the one for me, because you wouldn't have this Fukushima radiation thing, you wouldn't have this ocean of plastic in the Pacific. The Pacific would be healthy today had he not made that decision.
Yeah, so have you seen the reports of the horrible effects of this continual use of plastic water bottles? It's absolutely ridiculous, including they claim, and this came out of the UK, they do an awful lot of good research down there. They're just saying it's everything from heart problems and diabetes to all kinds of hormonal problems and a gender bending component in it and everything else. It's just ghastly, not to mention the garbage. We have been given chances over and over and over again, and we just keep blowing it. So the thing is, we either have to, if you'll excuse the expression, cowboy and cowgirl up and get this done and demand that we be heard, a la V for Vendetta. I don't suggest blowing anything up. I'm not suggesting that. But look what's happening in Ukraine. I mean, look at this. And who does it serve? I don't know. Do they want to be a part of the EU or do they not? Who's actually organized the protests and so forth? Before we reach the point that we are so poor that in our economic despondency, we can't really even think straight because everything rolls downhill. If you don't have no money, you cannot look after your nutrition, you're under stress, and hence you cannot even think straight. You cannot make rational decisions, you make emotional ones. And we must be aware of this so that we don't do that. But yes, I would submit to you, JP, that we are not only working with alien technology, we are working with the aliens themselves. You may be familiar with Wilbur Allen, the photographer who has his UFODC.com site. He photographs that stuff every night. One of my family members took a short video of... I can tell you this, they're not aircraft, they're not flares, and they're definitely not searchlights. And it'll be posted on the website. We have it up on YouTube right now, but I don't know where, because there are seven of us in the crew, including myself, and they're doing stuff all the time. And I trust them to just do it, and they tell me, they figure it's easier to ask for forgiveness than for permission. So we operate on that principle and just let them do what they want.
So segue once more, this is good. On your website...
Yep.
Is a logo, and on the logo is a pyramid.
Yes.
Atopped by a matching angle. Something actually looks a bit like a set square, a flying set square. Is this a Freemason craft? What's going on there?
Absolutely it is. No, it's not. Did you see the photograph recently? Now, this is really strange because... We just commissioned through one of my crew members, a young guy up in Denton, up at the university, and he made this logo. I said, I love camels, I love pyramids and that whole desert thing. Some UFOs would be good. I'm just there you go, just run with it. I told this to David, and he told it to this fellow who put the logo together. And it's so interesting because that craft you described looks very much like the craft, or whatever it might be, looks like a craft that they've recently photographed on the moon. A Google Moon has it. If you just go to any search engine and type in Google Moon Angular UFO on Moon's Surface, just those keywords, it'll come right up. It looks almost exactly like it, except it has more light disks on it. And this was an accident, too. Nobody sat and just designed it other than this designer. And you'll notice that the lead camel, there's no one on it. And I take this to be the invisible great one that is leading this caravan. And all of it, and we follow. So
the three wise men.
Yeah, looking for a fourth one, or maybe the great invisible wisest one of them all is actually leading the caravan.
The light being is on the front camel, yeah.
Yeah, I'm at the back, so, you know, yeah.
So you got this, and the other thing actually it reminds me of is a boomerang, which obviously the design had to come from somewhere, and perhaps they thought, oh, look, Let's make something that looks what, because you know they made these clay aeroplanes with the cargo cult thing, they made the clay aeroplanes. So why not make wooden versions of the thing and throw them around? Actually, discover that they loop around when they flew around, and they're invented the boomerang. I don't know. Maybe the boomerang came from another planet. Maybe the design is something that. The Earth created. So many questions. I got so many questions, John. So,
me too.
Yeah. So we've got about 15 minutes, and so please tell us about what's going to happen. You've got this big launch tomorrow. You're going to hope that your bandwidth is going to stand up to it, because it's a television presentation.
It is, and we did not anticipate this response. We had to go to this giant dedicated server. We had to actually tell the big third-party company, listen, I regret to inform you, you're not cutting it. So I got with a fellow who's a specialist. He's been doing this 10 years, just that I know of, and I know he was doing it for a decade before. And so we're on this monster server that can handle the traffic now. And so it's just working out the technical glitches. We will have people on the telephone. We'll have people on Skype. We'll have people come into studio. And by the time it's in its finished form, it should be an attractive presentation. It should be very interesting. And because it's television, I would like anyone who views it to feel free to just turn the picture off in case I remind them of their former brother-in-law and they don't like him. And they can just treat it as a radio program. We will take some breaks in there, but we will not have 23 minutes of commercials, and we will not be shills for any products. If there is a product or an invention and it's interesting, I'm just so tired of hearing about free energy. Here, buy this and it's free energy. Well, nothing's free, but there are alternative energy sources, and we want to look at those as well. So, like I say, I hope it's not a wild careening takeoff, but one way or another, we're going to get airborne with this thing tomorrow at 10 Central until 1 p.m. Central.
Well, let's hope your gravitas generator should keep the whole thing floating around, alive, and your containment field is fully operational within its parameters, and that the mothership gets a nice, smooth, steady launch. What's your lineup? Who's going to be on in the first day's broadcast, for instance?
Well, this first week is Intel Week, and we plan to have on Dr. Jim Garrow's coming back on, United States Marine. He's still involved with Special Operations. Named Donahue is coming on, and several other people. We do not post the upcoming shows because, well, we don't really want to give that away to. It'll become competitive. It won't be our doing, but it'll become competitive on some level. And we just thought we'd take that missile off the hard point of the mystery aircraft that may turn out to be hostile, and just present them as we go. And then we'll archive all these programs so that members can come back, go back and view them whenever they want. Say, before we get out of time here, I wanted to mention there's a program I've been involved with for a couple of years now called Unsealed Alien Files. And I understand you can get it on Discover America, I think is the channel. Discover America or Discovery America or something like that. Anyway, it's running in the UK, and I think it's the best. And I'm not saying this just because I was fortunate enough to be associated with the program. It really is a good program, and it addresses all this stuff, like the Dulce base out in New Mexico, and the what appears to be either the very one or a duplicate or replica of Die Glocke, the German Nazi bell that landed in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And USOs, the underwater-based UFOs, and light orbs, and close calls with the military. And there's one in there about the how these three light orbs showed up over this Ukrainian nuclear missile defense base. And the countdown to launch started. And so for 15 seconds, everybody's losing their mind inside the silo because nobody pushed the button and they can't shut it off. But they had observed these orbs up in the sky just before this thing started, counting down. And just about the time it was about to reach zero, it stopped and everything reset. And they breathed a sigh of relief, went outside, and the orbs were gone. And a fighter pilot in over Tehran that was scrambled to intercept a UFO, as he approaches, his whole instrument panel just shut off. Well, I call these things task orbs, and maybe other people call them that too, but they appear to be really good at turning things off and on. This also happened in the United States, up in the Dakotas. I believe it was 10 Minuteman nuclear-tipped missiles were just taken offline, and then 2 weeks later, it happened again at another missile base in the United States. So, look, this UFO deal is not the stuff of just wacky people who believe in the boogeyman. These things are absolutely, completely real. And when you have members of the United States Space Command saying things like, members of the United States Air Force Space Command move freely about the stars, don't make any mistake about that. Well, I don't know why you'd want to say something like that if it weren't true. And then you have... Buzz Aldrin saying, wait till people find out that there's a little potato-shaped rock that orbits Mars every 7 hours, and it has a monolith on it. Wait till they find out about this. And then Gordon Cooper saying, oh, yeah, we were out there filming, and a little saucer came down and landed, and the film crew continued to film as they ran over to it, and then it just levitated and sucked up its landing gear and tilted and took off. I mean, how much really do we have to have our noses rubbed in it before we realize it's real? It is real.
Totally. And was Neil Armstrong saying, oh yes, and one day truths protect, oh, I can't even say it, my teeth don't work, truth's protective layers will be revealed. You know, truth's protect, what is that, what the hell does he mean? Apart from, you know, there's been a big cover-up, and so that, you know, there's a lot of talk, you know, did we leave the planet, or can we go out of the planet, or can we not go out of the planet? How come McKinnon gave a list of the naval craft that are off planet? What's the deal? Can we get off the planet, or can we not get off the planet? I mean, there seems to be, you know, people are very militant both ways.
Well, you and I might not be able to get off the planet, but some of us are already getting off the planet. In fact, during that interruption in the transmission from the first landing, they thought that there were two UFOs just kind of sitting there watching, perched on the edge of this crater, which is what was meant by, and yes, there is a Santa Claus. That is alleged to be a code word for, now there's most definitely a UFO up here, but it was disguised as, yep, there is a Santa Claus. And everybody kind of chortled about it, but they were going, oh, dear.
Oh, crap. Okay. And have you read Sean's book, Sean David Morton?
I have not.
Check it out. Sands of Time.
Oh, I will.
Do check it out, because it's got an enormous relevance, and it's got lots of pieces of the puzzle and what it's all about. It's brilliant. I loved it.
Yeah, I like Sean David a lot. He brought me on his program, and he told me he was going to send me a copy of that book. So
excellent.
I'm waiting for it.
Excellent. Yeah, yeah. I hope you got good reading glasses. That's all
I do.
Oh, good. And a good light.
Well, let me tell you what, I have to have both at this stage of things.
I know, you know what I mean? You know, you're telling me. So, yeah, going to need it. I personally use two pairs of glasses. One pair of reading glasses popped inside my regular glasses in order to see the print. But it is a fascinating read. You can, you know, there's also digital versions. You can scale up the writing and everything. But, yeah, it's a fascinating angle on things.
Yes, you know, well, if you use the old Oxford Universal Dictionary and you get the double volume that's in the tiny, tiny print, you'll have to have your reading glasses and your Sherlock Holmes looking glass.
That's right.
To even be able to determine, now, what does this word really mean? And I would suggest that everyone take a moment to find an Oxford Universal Dictionary. If you can find one that was published before about 1981 or two, you'll be well off. And look up the word politics, and you'll find that not only does the definition just go on, but it's not a very nice word. So make that put that up toward the top of your list.
And with that,
mm-hmm.
Sir John Wells, I dub thee. Yeah, but if only I could, you would be. Thank you so much for coming on my show. It's been a fascinating conversation. Certainly a few nuggets more that make up the big puzzle. We're all getting to see it. That's what I love about this, the whole thing about interactive internet radio, is that everybody's being able to ask us really in-depth questions that get to the heart of the matter, and thank you for sharing your visions of it.
Thank you so much for having me on the program, JP, and I hope that you will come on to my program at some point in the near future, and we'll exchange ideas and have ourselves a rollicking good time.
Yeah? Absolutely. I haven't even started talking about the Seven Rays. You should check that out. Anyway.
Okay.
So, that's it for this show. Coming up next is Frank Jordan and the Healing Show. Tomorrow night I've got Thomas Hughes, who's very close to the end of his journey. And I do hope you're all going to join me, for, a celebration of his journey with us. And with that, we say goodnight.
Beyond.